What's different about the patient experience at Microscope Dentistry by Shoup? Well, who better to talk about it than this guy?
From the first time I went in there, I was always one of those people that held that stigma of, you know, not wanting to go to the dentist at all, an unbearable experience. From the first time I came to see you guys, it was very relaxing. I'm pretty sure you remember more stuff that's going on in my life than I do, because every time I come back here, you always know exactly what's going on, and that's awesome. And just the entire staff is great. As a health professional, our philosophical views match up very, very well.
This is the Dr. Shoup Show, presented by Microscope Dentistry by Shoup and DDSradio.com. Now here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Well, hello, everybody. It is great to have you here. Thank you very, very much for choosing to spend an hour with me. When you and I get together, you become smarter, better educated, more savvy, more understanding, more discerning, dental, medical, health, nutrition, consumer. You know everything that you're going to need to know in order to make your life a healthy, happy, great existence. And today, you know how it works. We start at Dental School 101. And I'm going to ask the question, why on earth would your dentist ask you about your sex life? Should your dentist ask you about your sex life? Would you tell your dentist about your sex life? We're going to examine why that just might be pretty darn important. And then ask the expert. Yeah, we call him Zits. Pimples, boils, pustules, blackheads, yes, it's the entire realm of acne. And you would be surprised how much science there is that we know about acne and how much science there is that we don't know about acne. And we're going to talk about what are the most current and most productive uses and of the products that are out there. How can you make, if you have particularly troublesome acne, how you can either get rid of it, or if you don't have it, you can prevent it in the first place. And you get to meet my buddy John. Now, he is new to us at the office, and he has a story to tell about some real significant hardship that kept him away from dentistry. And the thing about it is, now that he is back and now that he is ready to make a transition, he did not know what to do because dentistry had changed so much. He's going to give you his impressions of our first and second encounters at the office and what a difference that has made to him in terms of what he believes now is his possible future to save his teeth, when before he was absolutely convinced he was doomed to lose them all. It's a really great story. You don't want to miss it. But first, could your ultra, ultra clean home have an absolute correlation or even a causation for childhood leukemia? I'm going to tell you all about it right now.
Time to go under the microscope.
Look at me. I'm the one telling you how it is.
Well, you know, as we work and think about and study all of the various diseases, one of the diseases that is absolutely hardest and is most heartbreaking is ALL, and it is the acute lymphocytic leukemia. And it is common to children, and it is the most heartbreaking thing to see a child have to suffer. But there is some new research, long study research coming out of Great Britain that may shed some serious light on how you can actually impact this. Listen to this. Keeping children cocooned in an ultra-clean home away from other youngsters could trigger childhood leukemia, a landmark study suggests. A major new analysis by British leading leukemia expert has concluded a deadly chain of events is set in motion when susceptible children are not exposed to enough bugs to prime their immune system at an early age. Ding, ding, ding. Spoiler alert, where have you all heard this information before? Good old Uncle Randy, you and I have been talking about this for 2 to 3 years now. Let me continue. Without sufficient immunity, if vulnerable youngsters catch even a relatively harmless virus-like flu, the immune system malfunctions, creating a far more infection-fighting white blood cells than are needed, causing leukemia. Professor Mel Greaves of the Institute of Cancer Research in London said it was a paradox of progress in modern societies that advances in cleanliness has caused such a devastating condition. The study, which compiled 30 years of research into cancer, raises the prospect that acute lymphoblastic leukemia, ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia, could become a preventable disease, which Charity said was enormously exciting. Simple steps such as allowing children to attend day nursery so they can come into contact with germ-laden youngsters, breastfeeding, outdoor play, and not overly cleaning the house could all help boost immunity, the study suggests. Professor Greaves, who's the director of the Center of Evolution and Cancer at the Institute of Cancer Research in London, said the research strongly suggests that ALL has a clear biologic cause and is triggered by a variety of infections in predisposed children whose immune systems have not been properly primed. The most important implication is most cases of childhood leukemia are likely to be preventable. Preventable by creating a robust immune system in these children early on. The study out of Harvard indicated that parents have about 6 months from birth to 6 months, a very, very, very narrow window of time to really what we call challenge the immune system. You're not supposed to expose these little babies to measles, mumps, rubella, herpes, stuff like that. But you're supposed to get them out into the environment. That's what we human beings, that's how we formed. We were around animals. We were out in nature. We weren't cloistered in these little homes, breathing all of the manufactured chemicals that we have in our houses today. We were out breathing in pollen, breathing in dust, breathing in microorganisms. We were interacting with other people, shared herd immunity and that sort of thing. That's what it takes. And this research indicates. Now, you and I had a long conversation about causal and associations. This is not determined to be at this stage of the game causal. One thing doesn't cause the other. But what they're saying is that there's a really, really, really high correlation between those kids that don't get their immune system hopped up and primed early and those kids that have ALL. So take that as you need it. Be sure to tell your family, friends, anybody that you know that's getting ready to have a little baby, dirty those little suckers up. My new grandson has already been out in the world, taking him around, setting him in the backyard, letting him breathe the air, and let animals rub on him. His little brother, you know, comes over and kisses on him all the time. Dirty that kid up. Let his immune system do something besides sleep and eat all day. So there you have it. Now, up next, this is going to be good. Why would your dentist ask you about your sex life, and would you tell them? We'll talk all about it right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. He's intimidating dentists all over the world with his modern methods and non-traditional methods. The days of dentists charging you for unnecessary procedures are over.
You have to tell me something. I cannot stay calm.
This is the Dr. Shoup Show. Turn your attention to ddsradio.com right now and keep the learning going. Now, here's Dr. Randy Shoup. Life shines bright, everywhere we go. Music for the people to illuminate.
Well, it's so good to have you here. I really appreciate it. Thank you very, very much. You might want pencil and paper for this particular segment because we're going to talk about sex. Wasn't there an old song a while back? Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about... Yeah, I'm not a singer. That's okay. I'm just a dentist, does radio shows. That's okay. But yes, there was that song. And the question is, should your dentist and have a conversation with you about your sex life? That was the title of a very provocative article talking about what we're going to talk about. And it just so happens to dovetail into, you all know my dental hygienist, Sharon. And Sharon is phenomenal. She's incredibly skilled, very, very well educated, and very active in the world of organized dental hygiene. There is a American Dental Hygiene Association, like the American Dental Association. It is a national organization. It's really, really big. They conduct annual conferences and their big annual retreats and so forth. And it just so happened, Sharon, my hygienist, attended the ADHA, American Dental Hygiene Association's annual convention. He happened to be in Columbus, Ohio. And in the list of courses that you would take, she wasn't particularly interested in any of the little mundane ones on, you know, how best to polish somebody's teeth or new flossing techniques or anything like that. She was looking for what new modalities of therapy are there to cure periodontal disease, what's the DNA testing that is the most accurate right now for looking for the biology of the bacteria that is invading periodontal diseases. And one of the conversations was oral cancer, screening for and having conversations about oral cancer. She attended this lecture, about 300 dental hygienists in the office, obviously representing dental hygiene offices from all over the United States. And the presenter, the lecturer at the front of the room, was a leading expert in oral cancer research, and was presenting this data and information to all of these hygienists. And the lecturer presenter asked right at the get-go, after they were introduced, stood at the center of the stage and said, "I would like to have everybody in the room stand up." And every hygienist, all 300 or so people, stood up. And she said, the presenter was a female, and she said, "Now, if you are in an office that does not have conversations about oral cancer, about human papillomavirus, about oral sex, if you don't have those conversations with your patients, sit down. If you have those conversations with your patients, please remain standing." There was one hygienist standing. It was Sharon. And she said, "I was proud and embarrassed all at the same time," because she said everybody was looking at me like, "What planet did you come from?" And we were in this room, in this setting, some of the most progressive offices around the country. We were the only office that had these open, frank, honest discussions with people about the human papillomavirus, which is the most common sexually transmitted disease. Human papillomavirus is far, 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 far more common than syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, anything you want to mention. The human papillomavirus is a sexually transmitted virus, and it is one of the number one major causes for cervical cancer. You all know this stuff. We've been talking about it for a long time. But here, 2018, a national convention, we know this story, we know the science, we know the data, and in a national convention setting, one office is the only office that has this conversation. After the lecture, there were breakout sessions, And they were in groups of like 15 or 20. The lecturer broke the room into like five groups of 15 or 20 people. And in the there was a moderator in each group. And they went around the horn asking people. And, of course, Sharon was in one of the groups. And several people said that their doctors would in no way, shape, or form have that conversation with any of their patients. And the moderator said, why? And they said the doctor would be too embarrassed or wouldn't feel it was appropriate, didn't have the training, didn't have the understanding. So your dentist, if you are listening to me, your dentist and you should be having this conversation. The reason you need to have this conversation is that there are very, very, very successful, as you well know, vaccines against the human papillomavirus. And there are a number of them out there, human papillomaviruses. But the biggies, the big ugly ones that everybody talks about is human papillomavirus number 16 and number 18. Number 16 and number 18 are the ones that cause massive amounts, the vast majority of cervical cancer. For example, they're in Great Britain, in England, and for all of their kind of strange little characteristics, they do some pretty darn progressive things, okay? And they initiated nationwide a vaccination program with a product called Gardasil. You and I have talked about Gardasil for a long time. This is the conversation I have regularly with my parents. I said, look, you've got kiddos here, and I don't care if it's a boy or girl, both need this vaccination. When they become 8, 10, 12, 14, and don't hide your head in the sand, don't you dare for a moment think at 12, 13, 14, my kids aren't sexually active. Oh, heck yes, they possibly can be. I remember my last daughter going through Carmel Junior High School, and in Carmel Junior High School, 15 years ago, oral sex was not considered sex. It was considered a safe pass. And so we had this conversation that all the kids in junior high were having a lot of oral sex, but they didn't consider it sex because it wasn't intercourse. That was their thinking. That was the standard. That was how it was all playing out. So in Great Britain, they took this Gardasil vaccine, which is a wonderful thing. And between 2010 and 2016, they saw that the incidence of HPV, human papillomavirus, in girls dropped 86%. They also found they had a 90% reduction in reported cases of cervical cancer, because we know HPV 16 and 18 are the main cause of cervical cancer. HPV 16 and 18 is the number one agent that causes oral pharyngeal throat cancer in both men and women. And it's the number one cancer in young men right now. It is growing with a rocket, because it is fastly becoming the number one cancer in men overall. There's a product called Gardasil, which is a vaccine. There is now Gardasil 9, which adds 9 other of the HPV viruses. It not only knocks out 16 and 18, but it goes for 31, 33, 45, 52, and 58. That's how many of these human papillomavirus variants there are. And there is another product called Cervarix, C-E-R-V-A-R-I-X, Cervarix, and it also addresses HPV 16 and 18. So I have conversation with parents regularly when they have these children in, you know, 8, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15. You bet we start having these conversations to get this vaccination because the population out there has human papillomavirus. It's the most commonly sexually transmitted disease. And the vast majority of people that have it don't know that they have it. And you find it by pap smears, by biopsies, by being tested for it and so forth. And it is transmitted so frequently that it has to be, we have to start doing something to interrupt the cycle. Great Britain, happily, has taken a lead on this and is showing statistically the data that shows that by taking this vaccine, it dramatically reduces women's cervical cancer rates, and it dramatically decreases the level, the amount of HPV in the population in general. So, yes, dentists should have conversations about your sex life. Yes, you should be participating in these conversations. Your dentist should be knowledgeable about all of this stuff, and you should, it should be a part of their office practice in order to safeguard you in terms of your oral throat pharyngeal health, because there isn't any other way to do it. There you have it. So should you be talking about sex with your dentist? On an absolute professional level, yes. Casually, let's skip that, shall we, kids? Okay, up next. Now, you know of them as zits, pimples, pustules, boils, blackheads, whiteheads. It's all the realm of acne. We're going to digest down what works, what doesn't work, and what will work for you right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. Microscopic dentist by day, relentless researcher by night, worldwide leader in dental and overall health commentary, day in and day out.
That is a great idea.
Those are the only kind I have.
He is Dr. Randy Shoup, and this is the Dr. Shoup Show, online at ddsradio.com.
Well, it's good to have you here. Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate it. And, you know, being a dentist, we are up close to people's faces on a regular basis. And it is so common for folks to come in, moms, dads, people themselves who have really severe acne problems, to ask us, you know, what's going on? What's happening? Do you have any secret formula? Do you have any magic information that would help me with my acne? And so, thanks to one of you, my great listeners, you sent in a question specific to this topic, and I went and put all my efforts to do some research for you, and this information is because you, great listener, went on the website at ddsradio.com. You submitted a question. It was a really great question, and I'm going to do my best to respond to it now. So we're going to talk about that whole realm of stuff called acne. And so whether you call them zits or pimples or pustules or blackheads, whiteheads, whatever you want to call it, it really is all basically the same thing. And what acne is a plugged up hair follicle. In its most simple terms, it all begins with a plugged up hair follicle. Now, if you can imagine looking at a cross section of your skin, you have the top layer of skin, all right, which is actually called the stratum corneum. Stratum corneum, the top layer of skin, is a layer of dead skin cells. When ladies exfoliate, or when you use a really abrasive scrubber of some sort, you scrape off those dead cells. Those dead cells have a dull appearance. They mask over, they get kind of dull and grayish. They mask over the pinker underlying skin. People will say, well, you look real ashy because that top layer of dead skin is a grayish, dull color. You scrape it all off or hydrate it with oil and it picks up. You scrape it off, this top layer of dead skin, and you see the pink skin underneath. That's why when ladies exfoliate their face takes on a brighter, healthier, youthful appearance because you can see the pink skin underneath. So the stratum corneum, what happens? Those little dead flakes of skin, oftentimes, if the stratum corneum gets thick enough, will clog up the top of the hair follicle. So where the hair comes out of the skin, there's a gap around there. These little skin flakes will fall down in there. Now, down inside the hair follicle, off to the side, is a little gland called a sebaceous gland. And the sebaceous gland secretes oil. It is supposed to secrete oil. We want it to secrete oil. It is the oil that leaks up the hair follicle and spills out onto your skin that keeps your skin moist. It keeps your skin supple. It allows you to fight off invaders. It just keeps your skin healthy. On occasion, that little gland down there producing its little sebaceous oil is producing it, but the little skin cells plug up the hole around the top of the hair follicle, and the gland produces, so it swells up, it gets big. And that's what you and I call a pimple. And it starts to raise up. But here's the nice thing. As long as all of this occurs within the follicle of the hair and within the sebaceous gland, your skin really doesn't get particularly irritated about it. It doesn't really get very angry at all. It swells up a little bit. And if the sebaceous stuff that's down in there gets plugged up, and it pushes the little pieces of skin to the top, we call it a whitehead, okay? If the sebaceous stuff gets gunked up, but it makes its way all the way to the surface of your skin, that sebaceous stuff hits the oxygen in the air and oxidizes, just like a banana turns brown when it sits in the air too long. If your sebaceous gland stuff gets all the way to the top of the hair follicle, because of oxidation, it will also turn brown, and so it's called a blackhead. So growing up as a kid, I always thought that people got blackheads because they were dirty, that they didn't wash their skin, they didn't wash well, they had poor hygiene, that's why they had all those black dots. Absolutely, positively wrong. The takeaway from this is acne doesn't come from outside and affect your skin. Acne comes from inside your skin going out. So you need to get rid of stuff out of this sebaceous stuff out of your hair follicles, and the process gets plugged up. That's where acne comes from. Now, does keeping your skin clean help with the process? Why, sure, because you keep that dead skin cell layer pretty cleaned off. There isn't a whole bunch of stuff to fall down around the hair follicle and plug things up. So that's one of the major takeaways that I want you to understand, is that acne starts from the gunk inside your skin, not dirt from outside your skin that causes the acne, although keeping your skin clean indeed will be a big plus. The other thing is the gunk that you may squeeze out of your acne that looks like infected pus stuff typically, it's overproduced dead sebaceous gland cells. It is actually not infection. There's very, very, very little bacteria in that white stuff that comes out because it's all just gelatinized sebaceous material coming from inside the hair follicle. Now, if you play with those things, if you pick at them, if you scratch them, if you scrape them off, if you mess with them, dig at them with a pin or something, you're introducing massive amounts of bacteria into this area. The bacteria gets into this area. It's wet. It's moist. It's dark. It's perfect for growing lots and lots of bacteria. So the more you mess with the whiteheads or blackheads or any of these growths of sebaceous stuff, the more you mess with it, the higher the likelihood that you will get them infected. When they get infected, that's when they get gigantic. They have a big red border all around the outside of them. They get very painful. They grow a lot because now we have bacteria in. If you'll notice, during the summer, most people's acne gets lots better. Why? Because you're outside, you're in the sunlight, and sunlight has ultraviolet radiation. Ultraviolet radiation kills bacteria. And so your skin looks better in the summer because of ultraviolet radiation keeping the bacteria populations down. You are outside, it is warmer and hotter. It keeps the sebaceous gland stuff warmer, more liquid, more able to flow, and therefore not clog up and gum up the follicles there so that they stay drained rather than getting plugged and turning into whiteheads and blackheads and that sort of thing. Here's what's really cool, and I know you'll resonate with this. There is a type of acne called cystic acne, and cystic acne is so severe that the infection actually goes in and causes these sebaceous glands to swell to gigantic size. As they swell to gigantic size, they destroy the collagen in your skin where these cysts are. They become hard. They're almost like a pea or almost like a marble under your skin. And right now, the best therapy for treating those is ozone, because these are very, very stubborn infections. And so slathering something on the surface of your skin really isn't quite as effective. There are a lot of things like chemicals and medications that you can take that dry up your sebaceous glands, but that's really not a great thing for you health-wise. So look at ozone therapy for really severe acne. All right. Now up next, you're going to get to meet my buddy John. He is new to the office, but he is going to tell you how the personal touch that we gave to him helped him with his embarrassment and shame about how his teeth had become. He's going to tell you all about it right after this.
You're listening to the Dr. Shoup Show. Exclusive insider info, audio, and video is online now at ddsradio.com. Every week, the doc is seeing new patients that heard this radio show. They come into the office for an initial consultation, and then they believe what they heard on the airwaves.
Why are you smiling like that?
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
A real dental difference. Real results. That's microscopic dentistry by Shoup. This is the Dr. Shoup Show, online at ddsradio.com. Here's Dr. Randy Shoup.
Thanks, everybody, for being here. And as you all know, this is indeed my favorite part of the program. You get to meet really good friends of mine, some old, some new. And today, you get to meet somebody that's really, really new to our office. And we've got John on the line. John, how are you, sir?
Yes, sir. Good, Dr. Shoup.
he's getting all formal and everything while we're on the radio. This is really great. But John and I have just met, and I really think we're going to have a really cool time together. A really sharp guy, has done a myriad of things in the business world, and has a couple of new ventures that he's breaking out and trying to put together and form. But over a period of time, John, you were telling me that, and I'll share with the folks, it had been a stretch of time because of some variety of circumstances. You'd been away from dentistry, and now it was time to get back, and you came to the office with a lot of trepidation or fear. You thought things were going to be a disaster, and happily we were able to tell you they weren't quite as bad. So that had to make you feel better.
Trepidation is probably a good word. Well, not complete fear, but Definitely trepidation.
And so what were you imagining it was going to be?
Well, I guess, you know, with life, it sometimes it's a roller coaster. You got ups and downs, and we've had some, like everybody maybe, our own challenges. And
sure.
So, like you said, I'm coming back to the dental world. I can't believe we ever sort of took a pause from it. But life sometimes, you know, throws you a curveball, if you will.
Sure.
And I guess kind of jumping forward, you know, I was fortunate enough to hear you on the radio, and that intrigued me right away. I like, well, I like about everything. I like science, and I like anybody that's really passionate about what they do in their industry and their profession, and that's the way you struck me. So maybe I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I got to know you, I feel like, you know, a lot before you got to know me, because I got to hear several of your radio shows, and I started listening probably maybe one or two times a month. I think you're on, you know, every Saturday. But I would probably make the airwaves make your show at least twice a month. And the things you talked about, to me, were always, I would say, cutting edge. I guess I would sum up Dr. Shoup like, this guy is really a student of the dental world. He's definitely passionate about his profession, and I feel like I need somebody to not maybe just do the same old routine stuff. I wanted somebody that I felt that was really knowledgeable in the dental profession.
You're listening to the Dr. Randy Shoup Show. I'm your host, Dr. Randy Shoup, and you're listening to a new good friend of mine, John, who has made the transition and has come up to Microscope Dentistry by Shoup. And like you said, John, and thank you very much for those comments. You had been away for a while, and now you were, you know, at a position and had the motivation and heard me to come up to the office. So there was trepidation and a little bit of fear and of the unknown coming into the office. Once you and I sat down and started to have a conversation, once you and I started to create a game plan and did our comprehensive exam together, how did things turn for you?
Better.
Good.
Definitely better. I was greeted by you're surrounded by, you know, sharp, pretty girls. So that obviously makes your day probably go a lot better, Dr. Shoup.
Well, thank you.
But Rhonda, she's at the front desk, and she literally helped me and, you know, answered several questions. And then you with the examination, and Amy helped me there. I guess you'd say, you know, you helped put somebody at ease. You know, the dental world is right there, literally, you could say right there in your face. I mean, you're, you know, front and center. So trepidation or, you know, a little nervousness, you made me quite at ease.
Well, I'm glad we were able to kind of, you know, still the waters a little bit, kind of calm the turbulence and let us work through it. And then, you know, since we have, you know, looked at things, done the examination, so forth, and I gave you kind of a thumbnail sketch of where you were and what things I think we needed to go to. Then you got to transition and meet Sharon, and Sharon is going to be a major player in terms of getting the gum tissue back into health and so forth. And so I think we gave you a pretty bright picture. There's some things that we need to do for sure, but it's all very manageable, and that's got to make you feel better.
On a scale of 10, I'd say, you know, give it a 10. On a scale of 1 to 10, it's a 10 as far as feeling more comfortable. I was uneasy and a little bit embarrassed because it's just not our regular, modus, you know, the way we run our life. We try to be a good citizen, a decent person, clean hygiene and all those good things, and throw some money in the bank.
Sure.
And it makes you feel a little bit less when you're not, you know, as they say, hitting on all eight cylinders.
You know, John, you talk that what you said right there is really, really important, and we get this a lot. And you know, you mentioned about being a little bit embarrassed, and when people have circumstances in life that keeps them from being at going to the dentist or taking care of themselves in any sort of way, they start to imagine and dream that things are much worse than what they are, and they become embarrassed about it, a little bit of shame. I'm ashamed that I let myself go, kind of attaches to it. You can get some real guilt about having not gone and so forth, and all those things manifest into keeping you away even more. And then the more you stay away, the bigger those feelings grow. And for you to come in and address those things and handle them and tackle them, that's a really important thing that you just said. And I really am proud of you for being able to say it, because a lot of people that are listening have not been to the dentist in a long time. They know they have things that need to go, but they worry about going to an office and being shamed, being have fingers wagged at them, having being lectured to or talked down to.
Right.
And man, we
right.
never ever ever want to do that for anybody. Like I think I told you, I said when everybody walks through the door at my office, we grant absolution to everybody. Everybody starts with a clean slate.
Well, you definitely feel that with your office. I mean, your crew is really top notch. I'm not just saying this.
Well,
top notch, super friendly, and super professional. I mean, I go back to Rhonda, Amy, and Sharon, and I think the other lady's name is Quay, maybe.
Sure.
Who helped us.
Yep.
But very thorough, very professional, helped me. Everybody put me at ease. You know, and I probably, like, make probably a human nature, you know, kind of build up your own internal anxiety. And maybe it isn't, you know, as big as it really, you know.
Sure.
You make it out to be bigger in your own mind.
Right.
Than maybe it really is.
Yep.
So, and then you got a professional or somebody that's in that field, and they say, you, in this case, we can handle this. Like, well, great.
There you go.
Okay.
You hit a home run.
All right.
Well, John, listen, I have kept you long enough, my friend. Thank you very, very much for sharing your story with all of my listeners. It's really an important one, and it's one that I'm sure you've helped a lot of people, because you've shared, you know, that amount of intimacy with them. So I really, I'm very proud of you. I applaud you for it. Thank you very, very much. And so I'll let you go, my friend, and I'll see you at the office next time. But again, my sincere thank yous for being on and sharing your story. Thank you.
Dr. Shoup?
Yes, sir.
Very quickly, and I know we'll wrap this up.
No, you're good.
I want to say two things. The biggest thing, I think, of all the things we've talked about, the next biggest thing is we sat down at a little round table, you, myself, and Rhonda, and you personally took the time, way over 30 minutes, to kind of get to know each other.
Sure.
And that was another... To me, that was big. It was gigantic. And then, of course, after that, you know, we did more of the game plan and laid out the official game plan on what, you know, the different steps we're going to take, which, like you said, is quite manageable.
Sure.
But I really appreciate the time that you gave me personally. I mean, I think you gave you my background, my family, and things like that. And you talked to me about, you know, you did things in Africa, and you got your grandkids going on right now. And, you know, you kind of... Really, like you said, we are new friends, but you feel like we're going to be friends for a long time. So well, that's it. That's it at my end.
Well, John, I am honored by that, and you pay me a huge compliment, and I'm humbled by it, and I thank you very, very much.
Okay.
All right, my friend. I will see you at the office next time.
We'll see you soon.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye.
Yes, sir.
Well, there you have it. I hope you enjoyed that. Hope you had your pencil and paper handy. I hope you want to take your children out and just roll them in the dirt right now to get them as nasty and dirty as you can to help their immune systems kick into gear. It's always fun bringing you this information. I really appreciate it that you spend time with me. I also appreciate it greatly when you help us do the mission trips to Kenya. We're getting ready to go the first 2 weeks of September, so please go to ddsradio.com. There is a link there over to kinddentistry.org. We certainly need and appreciate your donation. So, until you and I chat next time, be sure to brush and floss.
Keep on smiling, 'cause when you're smiling, baby,